Welcome to Your Odyssey Podcast, where your guides, Tara and Karen, invite you on a transformative journey toward wholeness and personal growth. Each week, we'll discuss topics related to the human experience and offer insights to help you along the way. Please note, this podcast should not replace medical care or advice. We are not licensed healthcare professionals or mental health therapists. If you enjoyed today's episode, subscribe so you don't miss out on our future discussions. So, explorers, let's dive into today's episode. Hi, explorers. Welcome to today's episode where we are talking about International Day of Action for Women's Health. Why? Because that's when this episode is being released.
Women's health. That's a multifaceted
women's health. This
topic.
Is the first episode where we will explore
some aspects.
Some aspect of women's health.
Yes, ma'ams and gents. Mm-hmm. Peoples.
A brief overview of the International Day of Action on Women's Health, if you're not familiar with it.
I'm not so much. You did the research on that particular thing.
This day was started to raise awareness about women's health issues and advocate for fulfilling women's rights to health and well-being.
Women's rights to health and well-being. As if we previously didn't have those rights.
You guys.
Is that what you mean?
That's exactly what I mean. This day focuses on a range of issues related to women's health, including access to reproductive health services, education, and information, as well as the elimination of gender-based violence and discrimination. You guys, this day is huge.
And it's global.
This day was actually born in South Africa in relation to sex trafficking and other ways of
exploiting women.
Exactly. Mm. So this International Day is recognized by various organizations and individuals worldwide. So yeah, that's what we're talking about because this day means a lot to us.
Yes. And the fact that this subject needs a day to raise awareness, that's a red flag right there, right? Why, Tara? Why does this particular subject? Oh, well, because we have historically been property, couldn't have our own bank accounts, couldn't make our own decisions, couldn't go to school. I mean, let's go back to the beginning.
Is that even the beginning? Because that's just here in America that we are able to open credit cards, bank accounts, own property.
That's a good point. Other places, women are not.
Still.
Blows my mind.
For this episode, I had a hard time narrowing down a focus so we did not spend 8 hours in here and just get lost in the sauce, so to speak.
Yeah, exponential amounts of topics.
Mm-hmm. So I wanted to focus on the advocacy part of fulfilling women's rights to health and well-being.
Yes, that's a big slice and it's a great focus for this conversation.
This will not be the last time Karen and I talk about this, but for today's episode, let's focus on advocacy for women's health. Advocacy for women's health can take many forms. I'm hoping this podcast can be a catalyst for grassroots activism. Ignite the fire to lobbying efforts at the national level. Here today, there are so many attacks on women's rights to health care, be it reproductive health care or just general well-being. And I know our country is not unique to that, but where we are in history right now for this country, when we think that we have progressed so far, when you look at where we are lining up with a lot of countries that we never thought we would.
We are backsliding. And yeah, somebody's gotta stop the, I'm literally gonna say the hemorrhage. That's what it feels like.
You gotta stop the bleeding. Yeah. So there are a couple of organizations that we will link to, but I wanted to mention a few of them now. that are big advocates for the activism of women's well-being. There's Planned Parenthood, the National Women's Health Network, and the National Organization for Women. Mm. So
now,
after, exactly, yeah, after this episode, if you guys want to dive into those resources, support them financially or by volunteering, then by all means, do that.
When we put our time, money, or energy into something, that increases the impact that an organization can have.
All right. Advocacy for women's health. An important aspect of advocacy is raising awareness about women's unique health challenges. Before this episode, Karen and I were talking, yes, about how healthcare is for a very specific set of individuals. I won't call y'all out. I won't do that right
you
now.
You know who you are, but you're probably not listening to this.
But you should.
But you
because
should
you can advocate for women's healthcare and rights and general well-being. So our healthcare system it's set up that way.
Agreed. Because, well, patriarchy is insidious around the globe, mostly because they're aware of our power. And so that is fear-provoking. So let's take away some rights. Let's, yes, take away some power.
In terms of raising awareness for women's unique health challenges, women are more likely than men to experience autoimmune diseases such as lupus or rheumatoid arthritis.
Mm. Autoimmune disorders are directly linked to long-term stress and not getting the support and care that she needs.
Mm. Wow.
You know? And so that makes sense to me that I think, you know, I want to say probably heart disease as well. There's so many things that are linked when a woman does not get the care and attention she deserves to receive, or she's not taken seriously.
They're also more likely to experience chronic pain conditions such as fibromyalgia or migraines.
I lump that in with the inflammation, all these inflammatory diseases.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? These are all, and the autoimmune and the chronic pain, these are all from inflammation, which is generally caused by ill at ease, dis-ease in our bodies, almost always directly linked to stress.
Mm-hmm.
And not being heard or understood or taken seriously when our intuition is so strong, you know, and we go in to the Western medicine culture and it's so much harder to be validated and to feel our opinion matters when we know how we're feeling in our bodies, but it's not being taken seriously or taken into account at all sometimes.
Mm. Hmm. I love that you made the distinction between Western medicine.
Mm.
And when you said that, I was like, oh, Eastern medicine is more of a holistic approach.
110%, yes.
It's not, oh, this is the symptom. Let me treat the symptom.
Right. Right. It's always about root cause. It's always about balance in the body, in the mind, in the spirit, and how they all affect one another and most specifically present as illness in the body.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can address, how are you eating? How are you sleeping? All of these factors that contribute to well-being or the lack of. And Eastern medicines and indigenous cultures, that's what they do.
Right. All right. So we're raising awareness when we talk about advocacy. Advocacy also looks like improved access to healthcare services and resources.
Holy cannoli, yes. Sorry. I'm just like, yeah. Oh, boy.
What hit you?
Oh, man. I'm thinking it gets my goat and it makes me very emotional when I take a moment and reflect on what parameters are in place in a person's socioeconomic or race identity or whatever it is, it's so apparent who gets the services and where services are not only withheld but not even maybe talked about, or that's not an education. There's a void. It's an abyss.
There is a healthcare desert.
Yes. Right. And there's so many rural populations mm-hmm. around the country that is the same circumstance. So what are we doing to help our children and our families, our women?
Yes.
Everybody.
We can support improved access, advocating for policies that expand Medicaid or increase the funding for community health centers. You guys, community health centers are vital.
Yes.
We're not saying we need a hospital on every block, but a clinic somewhere that I can go, you know, my gout's been acting up. I don't have gout, y'all, but something I could just go.
That was such a good example of such a random choice of disease.
Right.
No, yeah. And where you can just get information
and get the awareness.
The awareness is just the first step all the way around.
When we improve the access and awareness, as Karen said, there are women who might not have otherwise had access to care.
That, my friends, is a crime, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
That is, here's where I'm going to say it.
Say it, girl.
Women are not property, and we are not an afterthought. We have a right to our bodies, and we have a right to be taken seriously, and we have a right to access to health care and education, all the things that we need. P.S., we're the ones perpetuating the human population. I don't see any men giving birth. You know, y'all better start taking it seriously. Right. Literally the ones extending our population. We should be the priority, in my opinion. Oh, it should be women, children, anyone else.
Isn't that how we feed people? Like, is that not the order of things? Well, maybe it's children, then women, but either way. There is something you said just now, and we are recording this episode during National Minority Health Month, and what you said prompted me to say we don't mean just any old body. When we say access to care, there's access to care, but we mean access to quality health care.
Providers who
will listen to and trust not only minority voices, but women's voices. So representation matters.
Yes.
When I choose healthcare providers, they're usually women because I know I won't have to explain myself, my situation to them.
Yes.
Be it for general or women's specific healthcare.
Yes.
So it's not just access to care, but quality care. Especially in minority populations. Yes. That's what popped in my brain.
And in the healthcare deserts, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm off my tangent.
Oh, no, so no, stay on the tangent.
So advocacy efforts can focus on promoting research and innovation in women's health. Advocating for increased funding for research on women's health issues can ensure that these beautiful healthcare providers have a better understanding of how to prevent and treat issues that affect women.
Yeah, because there's a ton of them. I mean, first of all, just the parts themselves.
I have a uterus.
There's a vagina.
There's
couple
some
ovaries. There's some parts as parts.
The bits.
And there's specific health care that needs to be addressed. And we can get into mental health issues. Mm. We can get into, not everyone goes through menopause, but that's a whole kettle of stew.
I feel we need to change the conversation as it relates to menopause for our daughters. I don't know about you, but
how about have the conversation?
Not too many people have had that conversation because they didn't go through it. It's just, oh, you just gone through the change, baby. More information.
Yes, that is a phrase.
I need
what
more.
What does the change equal?
At the base level, I understand that menstruation will cease. But all this other stuff, like the perimenopause years, what's happening?
I was reading something about research being done on mental health issues, intense mental health issues in women who are perimenopausal specifically.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just put a lot of money towards research in that, shall we? Holy cow.
And it starts with having that conversation. I have amazing aunties who recommend the books and the things. They don't just say, oh, baby, you're going through the change. I have a book for you.
Yes.
Read this. Let's talk about it.
Oh, I love that so much. I love that you have that.
So it's the conversation, and I don't want to be the only beneficiary. So if my aunties are willing to do it, then I'm going to do it for my daughters or my friends or whoever. Be like, oh yeah, that's the da-da-da in this book.
The validation of, no, you're not crazy. Mm-mm. And these things are actually going on in your body, these chemical hormonal shifts that are causing, maybe wreaking havoc and causing actual repercussions in your physical body.
Yes.
And in your mental health.
Just your whole being.
The whole thing.
Knowing you're not alone, to me, they are activists raising awareness of perimenopause and menopause. Having those open conversations about reproductive health and what it means or how it shows up for them to be a woman.
Yes, absolutely. I love that in my son's school, in fifth grade health class this year, they are talking about reproductive health. And they're
that
just
form
naming,
you get assigned.
They're just, yeah. And they're naming all the parts. And it was hilarious because I happened to be at the school that day and the teachers were walking around the classroom saying breasts, vagina, penis, normalize the conversation. These are the actual names of the parts. We've talked about that on a previous episode. And it's just, my mother still hasn't had the conversation with me about how babies are made. Can I just say that?
She made some.
maybe she's waiting. I don't know.
She made some. Did she not know how to get it?
She made some. Well, she didn't tell me. That's a really extreme example of having the conversation. Just also destigmatizing this conversation, reproductive health, how it works, what things might go awry, and how to address those things. I'm going to actually plug a friend of mine. She has a podcast. It's called All Things Menopausal. It's on all the podcast platforms. And she features guest experts in menopause and women's health issues. So definitely check out Mary Lee's All Things Menopausal podcast. It's quite insightful. A lot of information there.
Wow. Okay. Explorers, what we are really asking you to do is to come along beside us to be advocates for women's health. Bottom line,
everybody has a mother, right? We want our mothers and our sisters and our daughters and our grandmas and our grandchildren. We want everybody to have access, be knowledgeable, be healthy, have quality healthcare, and understand. Don't you want that for the women in your life? We want this for yourself if you're a woman, for the women in your life if you're a man, for all the women in your life, no matter how you identify. This is necessary. This is equality. This is equity.
Oh, yes. Advocacy for women's health is important in promoting gender equity.
Oh, well, there you go. There's that word.
Equity.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I also wanted to explore a challenge, so to speak, in women's health. Intersectionality. It's such a big word.
There's so many letters in that word.
Intersectionality.
Now, my dear Tara, are you going to define that word?
This is me. It's, research. Intersectionality in women's health refers to the recognition that health outcomes are shaped by various factors. Factors such as race, ethnicity, socioeconomic status, and other social determinants of health.
Directly related to or not to having access. Mm. And those factors.
Those factors.
Are wow. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, for example, a low-income woman of color may face unique health challenges related to poverty, racism, discrimination, all of that, that a white middle-class woman might not.
Right.
So, as we were saying before, those healthcare deserts would be more of a likelihood for the low-income woman of color than for the white middle-class white woman.
Yes. Yes, for sure.
Did I say white middle class?
You did. Woman? Well, she's definitely, she's white, very white. She's doubly class. White. She's doubly white. And you know what?
The white middle class woman. Goodness.
Yes. And as a white woman, I don't know if I'd say middle class, but maybe.
Check the stats. You might be.
I might be. As a white woman, I understand now, at this point in my life, the luxury of access that I have and that I have was born into. And that's not okay, my friends. That's not okay to have that disparity.
Healthcare is a right for everyone.
Say that again, Tara.
Healthcare is a right for everyone. I know that America is not unique in the challenges that we are currently facing, have faced, and will continue to face. But y'all, we can absolutely do better.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm getting choked up over here.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes when we're when I'm thinking about this, it feels so daunting. It feels like, can we affect change? Can we? It just feels so deeply rooted in the system and the systemic inequity, and it just my stomach just churns about it. We've got to do better.
Mm-hmm. Those barriers to accessing healthcare are definitely systemic. There are inequalities and discrimination that certain women experience in just trying to go to the doctor, y'all.
Let's just for a moment picture the scenario of the middle-class white woman going to a healthcare provider, and because she's a woman, she's being called too emotional or too sensitive, or her symptoms are being dismissed. She's got intuition or knowledge about her own body, and it's not being taken seriously. Okay, that's in the luxury of the white middle class woman scenario. She's not being taken seriously for the most part. She's not playing an active role in her health because she's being dismissed. So that's happening. And then now take that to the scenario of the low-income woman of color going into the same healthcare provider, even if the disparity and the dismissiveness when people are perceived in a particular way by how they appear externally, superficially, physically, when assumptions are made, and we've talked about this, biases come up and actions come from that. And that's not an even playing field.
Mm-mm.
And if you can't get an even playing field from your doctor, it just cycles, and then it permeates every aspect of this woman's experience.
Mm-hmm. Which leads to poor health outcomes. Intersectionality acknowledges that these factors, all of those social determinants of health, how she looks, the boxes we check. Intersectionality acknowledges that these factors cannot be separated from one another and that they work together to shape that woman's health outcome.
Yes, those odds aren't looking
they're
so good.
They're stacked if the, against.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're stacked against there. And those biases that you mentioned, we're not talking about someone openly biased. It's the unconscious things that are a part of the system. Things that we didn't even know were biased. Because that's how it was designed.
The systemic biases that are ingrained into
even educating the medical field.
Yes.
One of those things that I think about is BMI.
Oh.
The calculation for BMI was not even intended to be used the way that it is used today.
And let me just say, it's body mass index. It's ratio what is it, like fat to muscle or mm-hmm. something. Yeah, yeah.
So we use BMI to try to predict someone's propensity for insert whatever health condition.
To indicate a health condition or outcome.
Yes, it is to indicate health condition or outcome. And that in and of itself was not designed to be used that way. And that very specific set of people it was designed for.
So right there out of the gate, the scale is off.
So these biases are not always conscious. And it's just an awareness. When you see and understand how the system was designed, you can more readily pick it apart, build it better.
I love that, how the system was designed. We could we'll have a DEI episode for sure.
Of course, but,
have to talk about the systems that are in place and how so many until recently are just like, well, that's just how it is. Who designed that? Let's take a look at who the architects and the engineers were behind that. can we just do that
please
for a second?
Okay. Yeah. So please. Yeah. Okay. Recognizing intersectionality in women's health is important because it allows healthcare providers and policymakers to understand and address all women's complex and diverse health needs.
Understanding is the first step, becoming aware of the unconscious biases in order to understand what is at stake and what is at play.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't mean to interrupt you,
that is accurate. And an intersectional approach to women's health allows healthcare providers to provide more tailored and effective care considering this woman's individual circumstances and experiences,
including stressors, access to healthy, you know, health, clean water, and
all of those social determinants of health,
options, like all of those things. Yes, this is not a cookie cutter business.
Oh,
this is
my
not a
goodness.
Oh, you're a woman, ABC. Here you
and
go.
Here's this your, is how it will present itself, and you will start here and end here, and scene.
Exactly. As individual as we are, that's what healthcare needs to address. And that's what I love about Tibetan medicine and Indian medicine, Ayurveda, Chinese medicine. We're looking at the whole person.
Holistic.
That person, not this group of people, not all women. We're looking at this person. We're getting information, testing certain things, and understanding this person's physical composition and all of the social determinants that go into creating a particular state of health or lack of.
And when we do that and look at women's healthcare that way, we can reduce healthcare disparities.
And it also goes back to equity.
Equals equity at 100%. Mm-hmm. Yes. Why is it so hard for healthcare as a whole to take a look at this? Is it just too big of a, is it a, it's a Goliath and you just, oh man, we start uncovering that piece and then it's just, the whole thing's going to unravel. Yes.
It needs to fall all the way apart in order to get it right.
Mm.
And it's not like we don't have models for how it could be.
Exactly. However, we do have lots of money and
lots of
lobbying.
To keep it the way it is, it has to stay this way.
It has to stay this way to perpetuate our financial system. We need to dismantle and rebuild from the ground up. We need to pay attention. We need to advocate for ourselves and for those who cannot advocate for themselves.
You know what? And on that note, I feel like this song,
oh yeah,
is appropriate.
It is. Is it time?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is called Fight Song.
Check out this week's song on the Yo Podcast playlist on Spotify.
Hell yes! Woo! Oh, that might.
Dang, that felt good. That might be.
Maybe our favorite so far.
Oh my god. Oh, we were
explorers.
I'm actually out of breath.
Because we were fighting. Like, it was a fight zone. Like, we rallied. We rallied ourselves to the cause of women's health.
Yes. Activating.
Mm.
Activating the power.
This fight song activated that. Whew. I don't know if Rachel intended for that to be such a rallying cry.
Oh, it does. It holds such
but
power.
But my goodness.
Whew.
Yeah. Take back your life.
Mm. Hold the power. March.
So we just some small boats making big waves.
That's, we do it together.
Together.
All things that are going to change are going to start with one, two, three, five people. And
one.
Keep going.
Yeah. Okay. Karen and I are fired up.
Oh, man.
And we are going to try to simmer down to get through the rest of this episode. We played our fight song. Today's question of the day: how can we address the unique health needs and challenges women face in different stages of life, such as adolescence, pregnancy, and menopause?
Well, heck, first of all, we have to have the information. We have to be talking. We have to be educating the next generations, our daughters. We have to be talking about it with our peers. We need to know what we're dealing with, and we need to normalize these things that happen in a woman's body. We have to have the conversations first, I think, first and foremost. The resources. Don't even. I should have let you go first, because then...
We did it again, folks. Explorers, we did it again.
Because I was looking at that question, and are you talking about, like, major?
I answered this question yesterday. And just now I'm looking at what I wrote.
It's going to crack me up.
So, okay, sorry. My answer to how we can address the unique health needs and challenges women face. The two words that came to mind for me were education and empowerment.
Empowerment. I thought you were going to say conversation. I was like, oh my God.
No.
Education and empowerment.
Education and empowerment.
Mm.
Like you said, we have to be willing to have those conversations. We have to be willing to educate about reproductive health, healthy eating habits, so women can make informed decisions about their health. Education also helps reduce the stigma associated with certain health conditions, such as sexually transmitted infections and mental health issues. If we reduce the stigma, we can help women seek help to address these issues, or at the very least, be willing to discuss these issues openly.
In some cases, the education empowerment is going to help them avoid the situation.
Education.
To begin with.
Protect yourself.
Protect yourself.
Starts with the education. And education on women's health can occur in various settings, as Karen said, in schools, community centers, why they're important, health clinics, and even at work, anywhere and everywhere.
Yes.
We should be first and foremost educating about women's unique health needs. And then empowerment flows from that education.
Absolutely.
So when we have the knowledge, the tools, and the resources.
Knowledge is power.
Mm-hmm, right? We can make informed decisions about our health. When women are empowered to take care of their health, they're better equipped to manage or prevent health issues such as heart disease, diabetes. And we're more likely to seek it when we have that knowledge and feel we are empowered.
That was a beautiful answer to that question.
But why are answers always overlap and we don't talk about it?
Well, because because those are the obvious answers.
We just spent an hour talking about.
I really want to go back. I'm like, has there been an episode that one of us was not floored by the overlap.
I mean, but we know this about our alignment. We know this about our how we work together. Mm-hmm.
There's connected knowing, and then there's
and then there's like, whoa,
oh, it's been
there's
proven.
Evidence.
Oh,
yeah,
it's
there
been
it
proven
is again. Yeah, it's so true. I love that you said education and empowerment, because the conversations are part of the education, mm-hmm. the awareness, the conversations, you know, not being afraid to bring up a subject or ask a question of another woman. Hey, I'm having this. Are
oh
you, have you ever
gosh.
Experienced this?
How many conversations have you and I had about things I could not imagine my grandmother sitting around and talking about, like, with her friends? Like,
I remember one specific time I called you. I'm like, this doesn't feel normal.
Is this what
you're saying?
No,
you're like, oh, no, that's
no,
yeah,
baby.
This is you're gonna go get that checked out. Okay, yeah, we need to lean on our women's circle. We need to discuss and explore and ask questions and find answers and disseminate the information to any other woman that we can. Yes. And then the empowerment piece, taking that knowledge, making decisions, having sovereignty mm-hmm. over your own health. We need to own our power. We need to own the fact that we have intuition and knowledge about our bodies inherently and we know, and we need to be heard, and then a plan needs to be in place. But even before all of that, if we have the awareness and the knowledge about the stressors and the nutrition and all of the things, then we make decisions accordingly. And the hope is eventually we hedge our bets and get ahead of things.
Mm-hmm. Women's health education and empowerment is not just the work of women. In everything, allies are important.
Yes.
So guys, fellas, bros,
broskies, bruh.
Bruh. This is a call to action for you too.
Find out. You have the conversations. Support the women in your life. Support change. Support doing better. Support policy changes.
Maybe, because some of y'all already act like y'all in charge of our bodies anyway and won't know more about it. But really, just get some business about yourself, please.
Women have a right to their own bodies, just like everyone else.
And that's all I'm going to say about it.
Is it, though?
Today.
There you go.
In this episode. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Oh, that's rich.
I want to spend the next 7 hours in here on the soapbox.
That's good stuff. That's good stuff. Just all explorers, call to action here. Women explorers, take care of yourselves. Do yourselves a favor. Ask questions. Find resources. You deserve this. And if anyone has overtly or covertly told you otherwise, they're full of sh- So, can I say that?
We'll find out.
Well, we'll find out. So, you make sure that you advocate for yourself. You know your body. Advocate for yourself.
Okay. This has been a journey.
Indeed. Oh my gosh. I can't believe we talked so much about this.
And
I'm always blown away by where we go. Where we end up.
So much more. Okay. So as we wrap up today's journey and have a call to action for our beautiful explorers, a quote from the lovely Michelle Obama.
I love this woman.
We've quoted her before.
We have.
And we will quote her again.
Yeah.
So today's quote, communities and countries and ultimately the world are only as strong as the health of their women.
Amen, Michelle. I was trying to say that differently earlier, and I couldn't quite. I'm thinking, we're the pillar, and if the pillar is broke, it's gonna fall. So I love how she says that. We are only as strong as the health of our women. Yes, beautiful. Thanks for that, Tara.
Of course. Explorers, we are so glad you journeyed with us today into the International Day of Action for Women's Health.
We love that you're here with us. We love that you take the ride. We appreciate you so much. We'll see you next time. Take good care.
Thank you to Queenie's in downtown Durham for the use of their community podcast studio and for welcoming us so warmly each week. We'd like to give a shout out to Coco Cinnamon, the birthplace of 1023 Media and the Yo Podcast. Please support your local, women-owned, minority-owned coffee shop in downtown Durham. Brought to you by Durham-based 1023 Media, a heart-centered, woman-owned multimedia company.